Hi, everybody. Thanks for viewing EM&C's Digital Marketing Rockstar Breakout Session, How to Succeed with Email and Social in 2012. I'm Melissa Campanelli, Editor-in-Chief of EM&C, and I welcome you here today. Email and social should not and do not work alone. In fact, there are many more ways than ever for the two mediums to play nice in the sandbox, but it's not a one-size-fits-all strategy. Today in this session, you'll learn all about how you can leverage and integrate strategies and tactics in your organization to achieve email social bliss. Today we've got a great speaker on hand, Andrew Kordick, the co-founder and chief strategist of Trendline Interactive, which is an email-centric, email-only marketing agency. He'll be discussing this great topic, so take it away, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Welcome, everybody. I hope you took your caffeine pill today, or at least riled up, because we're going to talk a little bit about email marketing and social media. There's a lot of talk about it in the marketplace and whether or not there are a marriage made in heaven or if they're headed for divorce. And I think after this session, you're going to learn a little bit about that. So here's a little picture of me. If you want to learn a little bit more about me and my background, I've got about 20 years of marketing experience. The last 11 years have been in digital, primarily running email marketing programs on the client side for the companies that you see on the screen. If you want to learn a little bit more about me or why I actually have that mohawk in the picture, all you have to do is Google my name. So most people would say, why did you leave Groupon back in October of 2010? Well, I have a passion for email marketing, and I started a company called Trendline Interactive. Now, you can read what we do here, but the clear difference between us and most of the different agencies that are out there today is that we are email-centric. We are focused specifically on email marketing. We do some stuff with email integration to social and mobile and all that good stuff. I encourage you, if you want to learn more and learn a little bit more what differentiates us in the marketplace, visit us at Trendline Interactive, or you'll probably be able to get it when you Google my name. So let's talk a little bit about email marketing and social media. Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but social networking or social media began in 1971. And this is actually a picture of Ray Tomlinson's ARPANET lab, where he actually sent the first email. So when we start talking about email and social, most people will then equate to email being for old people, right? While social media only being created, so to speak, in the last several years, is for the cool kids out there. Well, one of the things that we all have to realize in today is that it really doesn't work alone, right? It's definitely not a tactic, but ultimately when we start talking about email, email's not a tactic either. Let's take a look at something very, very interesting. I like sandwiches, right? So we all like sandwiches, and I call email as the bread between social media and mobile. And without that kind of bread putting together the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, guess what you have? You have nothing. Email is that complement to everything that we do out there, especially when we start talking about social media. So what in the heck am I talking about? Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about how marketing has evolved over the last pretty much 20 years or so. So I am not afraid to say I graduated from college in 1991 and was kind of introduced to email. But as a marketer way back when, we only pretty much had a couple of different outlets. Then as the things kind of started to evolve in the 1990s, we had these awesome things called websites and online displays and this huge thing called search, which kind of all really kind of get everybody excited. Then as we kind of got to 1999, a little bit more stuff kind of started to evolve as a marketer. Now remember, as a marketer, you have all this kind of areas to play in. And then kind of in the 2000s, it evolved. I have to admit, we were all on MySpace. Please don't adjust your screen. I was on MySpace. I'm sure most of you guys were. But look at this other stuff that's happening, right? RSS and podcasts. And then we get to 2010, and now kind of going into 2011 and 2012 now that we're in, we've got all this other stuff, you know, this augmented reality. And this newest website that everyone's talking about is Pinterest, which is hard for me to say, but it's actually a pretty cool site. So what does this tell us, right? We've got all these different channels. What do? Well, to kind of wade through all of this stuff, and as marketers, we need to understand what motivates consumers out there today. So the way I look at it is where we break it out by three specific areas. We've got the subscribers to email. We've got the fans, or the likers, as you want to call it, on Facebook. And then we have the followers, the folks on Twitter. When we start talking about these things, they're critical corporate assets, right? And as assets, what do they need to be? They need to be cultivated. They need to be protected. and they need to be understood. Why? Why do they need to be understood? Well, very simple. They're in limited supply. They are going to, I equate them to kind of like an oil reserve, right? They're going down. And so what do you have to do? There's a lot of things we're going to talk about today. ExactTarget's got this wonderful series called Subscribers, Fans, and Followers. I think they're up to the ninth paper these days. And basically what this graph shows is that a lot of people are subscribed to email. A lot of people are fans or likers of brands. And then there's not a lot of people, kind of following brands on Twitter. Well, what does this tell us about the subscribers? Well, they obviously want their expectations met. Well, why do they want their expectations to be met? You know why? Because the competition in the inbox, it's for every other email that's more relevant than your email. There's a lot of people and a lot of noise out there today. So what do you have to do? You have to kind of cut through all of that. And when people start talking about, you know, why they were motivated to give them their email address, guess what? They wanted to get discounts and promotions. But what happens when they kind of get sick and tired or when they are no longer interested? Well, they click on the unsubscribe button. And historically, we've often kind of looked at email as kind of a playful area. But now, if you look at people are saying, you know what, it's not as fun anymore. Why? Well, probably because there's an inordinate amount of email. Spam has actually gone down, but what happens is there's a lot of brands talking to the masses and not talking to the individual. So when we start talking about that fan, those fans or those likers, as we like to call them, they want to be entertained on Facebook, right? The reason why they kind of chose Facebook is because they wanted to reconnect with old friends. They wanted to maintain some kind of personal contacts. And again, this is from the subscribers, fans, and followers series, right? But what happens when they start liking brands? Now, there's a whole series of people talking about likes and dislikes. I don't know about you, but I like brands, and it's definitely a lot less than when I became a fan of them. But why did people like and start to dislike brands? Well, you know, there's a lot of statistics out today. I think one I just heard the other day that, like, only 1% or 3%, and I need to actually give you that actual number, but it's very, very low, of people actually interact with brands online, definitely within Facebook. Excuse me. Fans. Right? They're fickle, right? People come kind of in and out. A like is not necessarily the same thing as a fan. And when Facebook switched that over for fans to likes, I don't think that there's a tremendous amount of sort of influence or people being wanting to have a better association with the brands. But now we start talking about people that follow brands on Twitter, right? They want influence. They want access. They feel as if they are very powerful. And so they want to kind of get to the inside. They want to get updates. They want to interact with the brand. And then kind of why they unfollow people is, you know what? The content became repetitive. And we know that there's a huge fire hose of information out there. So often what I deal with when we go in from the email perspective and kind of how to integrate all this stuff, we found that there's a lot of organizations that are siloed today. There's a lot of people that manage the activity in two separate channels. And what happens when that happens? Well, guess what? They all compete for budget, right? So what do you do with this big mess, this big hot mess that we start talking about, Facebook and Twitter and email, and how do we kind of put that all together? Well, I've been married for about 16 years, and I know that kind of the way marketing works and perhaps maybe the way marriage works is to kind of have like pieces of the puzzle, right? These are kind of like the six important things in order to kind of maintain that happy marriage, so to speak. Some are better than others. Well, the same thing kind of equates to the integration of email and social. And there's really six ways to kind of do it. And these are the six pieces of the puzzle. Now, they're not necessarily always dependent upon one another, and they're not always should be carried out by each and every organization. But when the pieces of the puzzle come together, guess what happens? Supposedly, right, you get better results. But there's a big but in there. And a lot of organizations love to kind of do the shotgun approach. My philosophy is in this particular kind of an audience, you have to figure out where people are at today. In this big, vast ocean, are your customers, are your subscribers, are your fans, are your followers, do they actually play on Twitter? Do they actually play on Facebook? Do they actually play in the inbox? Finding that channel, and then guess what? Making sure that each channel kind of is messaged differently, but cohesively together. There has to be a way to do it. You can't have the same sort of information that's being said on Facebook to be said in email. Guess what? Because then it's overload. It's information overload, and people get what? They tend to tune out. Now, one cool thing that social media has kind of taught us, at least from the email channel, is that there's a humanization, right? Think about this. You're out on Facebook. You're talking with people that you interact with on Facebook, or you meet people in person. You have that human kind of interaction. Well, email needs to kind of evolve into that. And I think there are several brands that are doing it extremely well. Here's a great example from Tom's. These are people that are talking about their favorite shoes, but guess what? They're employees. They're talking or speaking to you, not in the marketing speak, but they're connecting me with the brand. And I think that's really, really important when we start talking about integration. And it goes well beyond just kind of putting a button in the email. We're all obsessed with buttons, right? Because this is part of that whole content area. People love buttons, at least brand people do. Follow us, like us, share it, do all this kind of stuff that's happening in the email, and they don't tend to kind of overlook, like, good Lord, there's a tremendous amount of overload. I mean, do yourself a favor. Take a step back for a moment in your email program and look at your actual email and what you actually want them to do. You need to whitelist it. You need to look at the mobile version or the view the web page or take action on the email or share it or fan them or like it. And then all of a sudden, you have to look at what the actual purpose of the email is. Is it the purpose to sell something? Is it the purpose for them to download something? What's the purpose of the email? And sometimes people start looking at all these different buttons that they put in there, and it tends to cloud the email. Now, with that said, people said, well, if you put these buttons in, you get a higher click-through rate. Well, you know what? I look at statistics like this, and I love GetResponse, right? But we have to look at it on the actual subscriber level and the actual company level. Just because you put button in the email doesn't mean you're going to get higher engagement. You may get higher engagement in certain areas, but is it the areas that are going to actually make you money? Right? So then we start talking a little bit about looking at that growth and content piece, about the difference between social sharing, right? The ability for me to share your sale out to all of my Facebook or Twitter friends, the difference between actually sending you an email to like or follow you, and then kind of doing both. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about why sharing is an emotional kind of state here in a minute. But when we start talking about putting these pieces together to integrate social and email, there's this whole growth factor that's involved, right? And sometimes people do or do not leverage Facebook or Twitter or email to grow each one of the channels. Here's a great example of leveraging Facebook, not just putting up an email sign-up, but actually making enticing, inviting, the reasons why, giving them the steps to grow your email list through your Facebook channel. You can do it in sweepstakes, right? Not necessarily always the best thing to do for each one of the brands that are out there. I'm not giving you a best practice here. What I'm giving you is an opportunity to understand that there is things like sweepstakes. It may not be great for your brand. It may be wonderful for your brand. I don't know. But growing your email list by throwing in some sort of a sweepstakes contest in Facebook is actually a great thing. Here's an actual interesting email from GNC, right? Look what they're doing in this email. They are pumping Twitter out to their email folks. And so if they've got a really good Twitter presence, what a wonderful opportunity it is to leverage the email channel to grow your Twitter channel. Now, let's take a step back here for a second. We start talking about growing your Facebook channel, growing your Twitter channel, or growing your email channel, kind of interplaying in all of this. Let me help you guys out and making you guys understand. If your Twitter channel sucks, if all you do is barf product information or barf sales that are on there, and it's replicated over to Facebook, and you don't have a lot of interaction with folks, don't do this. It's not worth it. People kind of tend to glom on to this kind of stuff because they see it as their competitors doing it. But what happens ultimately is that if their Twitter channel is not living up to the expectations that Twitter should be, you know, that you should as a follower on Twitter, don't do it. I see tons and tons of brands kind of following into this. This is a little hard to read, but Jenny and Jack sent out this email saying, hey, guess what? Come out and like us on Facebook or join us on Facebook. You're going to receive these newest collections and special announcement and so much more, which is typically different from that of brands that are saying, like us on Facebook and get 20%. If, in fact, Janie and Jack do what they say in this email, it's a wonderful medium to kind of push within email, right? They interact with the people on Facebook in a different way that they would interact, and they're giving the opportunity to kind of do all this. Where am I going with all this, right? We start talking about, well, what sort of campaigns happen out there? Well, there's an actual campaign that happened that I've used plenty of times from an example of how social and how email work together. Now, Sephora, for those of you that know Sephora, sent out an email, I think it was Q3 or late Q3, early Q4 of last year. And the email basically said, hey, here's some new stuff on Facebook. Come and build your mood board on Facebook. But look carefully at this email. There's a start styling, and then there's a start shopping. What are they doing in this email? Well, they're leveraging the fact that there's got something new, right? And maybe instead of taking them to their website, you got to go to Facebook to interact. Well, the cool thing is that now they're leveraging the sales aspect of trying to sell you something, which is wonderful, and then trying to drive you to their Facebook page. Well, when you get to their Facebook page, and again, I'm not a Sephora user, some of you guys listening to this might be, it's cool. I was able to actually interact with the brand, right? And I was actually able to create my mood board. So it was a really kind of a cool interaction. Now, it's hard to see, but if you look down the left-hand rail, they also have a link out to their Twitter page. They also have other stuff that's involved on their Facebook page that just moves beyond Facebook. So where am I going with all this, right? What ultimately do people need to kind of do to look at these metrics and make sure that they're successful? Because often, right, what happens is that you'll sit in a meeting and somebody will say, how many Facebook fans do we have, or how many Facebook likes do we have today, or how many Twitter followers do we have, and how, you know, does that make us successful or not? Well, I'm going to break it down simply, right? Some of the stuff to look at is really how much traffic came to your website by social links. That's in email or other places that you put it out, right? How well are you guys interacting on Facebook or LinkedIn? That's content that's delivered from email, right? Not just if you put, not just stuff that you're actually doing within Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, but how many people are actually interacting as a result of coming there from an email, right? What are your social sharing rates? Remember I mentioned this before with that big button stuff? A lot of companies today don't necessarily know what the social sharing rates are. They just throw the button in to share it, and don't really have any idea of how to measure that. And again, it's another what I would consider to be distraction in some cases of really what the email is. What are your opt-in rates from your social sign-up forms? This is a great one, right? Because you've got all these different forms that come from either you can drive them from Twitter or drive them within Facebook. And then how well are people obviously subscribed to your email program, but then can you track them through? In other words, if I get someone signing up for my Facebook page, what is the value of that subscriber versus somebody that came from, let's say, paid search? Are they a more valuable subscriber? So take that to the next level. Looking at this quickly, right? I mean, you have to kind of look at, you know, the social share or the social buttons, and really are people interacting with that, or is it, again, that whole kind of distraction? Lastly, there's a thing called subscriber referral value. Now, this is kind of hard of a number to try to get at, but let me explain it to you real if I can. The subscriber referral value means that if I, Andrew, get an email, love it, forward it or send it or share it out to my network, and someone as a result of my share subscribes to your program, what is the value of that individual that comes from my share? Are they more valuable than others because they came as a result of that social share? There's a lot of little formulas that we can kind of work together to figure out what that subscriber referral value is. Because ultimately, if you're getting great subscribers and great lifetime customers as a result of that, you're going to want to do what? You're going to want to do more. What's the next level, right? So the next level is this last piece, which we call data, right? Where there's these connecting Facebook fans to your email list? How many people are on your email list that are Facebook fans? How many of you, I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of getting sick of the like us on Facebook within that email, and guess what? I'm already a fan, or I'm already a liker. Why not message them differently if you're able to identify that they're a Facebook fan on your email list to say, hi, friend. It's a different feel. It's that humanized approach, right? Then you got to do is once you kind of match everything up within your system, you create then kind of these personas or these profiles of, you know, your social engagement versus your email engagement. And ultimately that leads to the communicating of that one-to-one type of communication that every pundit out there loves to talk about. That's that holy grail. When you take these three steps, you may see the light, you may not see the light. It may not be for everybody, so don't get freaked out when you see this kind of stuff, but this is ultimately, I think, where all of the channels and where everybody is going to be going over the next couple of years. Here are my final thoughts. First and foremost, this stuff is evolving, and I will tell you this, I've spoken around the world about social media and email integration. Really, there's not a lot of people out there doing it. And doing it with a tremendous amount of conviction that they are doing it correctly. The first thing you should do is don't emulate what your competitors are doing, what everybody else is doing. Try to understand where your subscribers play, and then try to make it unique to you guys. Each channel is a little different, right? You need to kind of message people differently. And here's that thing, right? This whole sharing thing, the social share within email, is very emotional. Guys, I don't want to promote or share out to my network that socks or shoes are on sale for 20% off today. Because guess what? People are going to tune out of my Facebook page like they're assuming they already are. So that being said, you got to give them a really good reason as to why they want to share that email. And it doesn't always have to be that something's on sale. Don't go buy the button, right? I say this with a tremendous amount of confidence in that share with your network or the ability to share emails may not be right for your program. And I say that with conviction because there's probably a lot of programs out there that don't need it, don't want it, and shouldn't even have it in their programs. Moving beyond that button is very important. And I know that's really hard in organizations. Remember, guys, I spent 10 years on the client side trying to convince executives that just because everybody else is doing it doesn't necessarily mean we should. Everybody is in this together, right? Everyone needs to work as a team. We start talking about those silos and start talking about people, you know, maneuvering for budgets. Now, this is part of the communication plan and the overarching communication plan out to your subscribers, your fans, and your followers. No longer is this discussion a technical one. It's a business decision, right? Everyone needs to be involved, and everyone needs to be at the same table together to discuss what the communication plan is out there. They're working together. We all need to do it for, guess what, the common goal. And that common goal is what? To keep the longevity of the subscriber engaged across a multitude of channels about how they want to stay engaged with your brand. So to wrap it up, we start talking about, as marketers, we start talking about relevance, right? Relevance, 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 relevance. We talk about it all the time. But to the subscriber, the consumer, they just want to make sure that you care. They want to make sure they're not saying to you, I want ABC Company to be more relevant. They're saying they just want to make sure that that brand cares about them. So when I started thinking about what brands, at least across a multitude of different channels, if it's in-store, out-store, online, customer service, start thinking about three brands that really were kind of epitomized what they mean that they care about me. And they go really without any explanation, to Zappos and to Amazon. Now, here's my last challenge to all of you. How are you guys, as marketer, going to demonstrate that you care to your consumers or to your subscribers or to your fans or your followers? It's a big, hefty challenge, folks. I know it is. It's evolving all the time. Don't get frustrated. Test into specific things, but demonstrate to people that you care. If you want to learn more, if you want to get a hold of me, I am your resident email dork. I'm proud to admit that. You can contact me from a variety of different ways. I thank you very much for your attentiveness. I hope to hear from you. Please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or any other method possible. And again, hope you had a great day. Thank you very much for your time.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Andrew. Another great presentation. Lots of fun and lots of good information. On behalf of EM&C, I want to thank you for attending the first installment of EM&C's Digital Marketing Rockstar webinar series, and again for opting to view this breakout session. Don't forget that our sessions are available on demand. Just click the widget marked with the star below if you'd like to watch another breakout or the main session again. And thanks again, Andrew. Have a great day.